Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Welcome to Breaking the Silence. We are live, so much live tonight. I had to lower the blinds. Look at that sun, because it was barreling in here so hard. It was whitewashing everything, so I had to lower the blinds. During the first commercial, I'll raise it so you can actually watch the sun go down when it stops being so bright. But that's what you get when you live in Houston, Texas, because it's the absolute most beautiful city in the world, no doubt about it. Welcome to the program tonight. Just so glad you're here with us. And literally, we just got online and live just seconds ago. So I haven't had a chance to say how to do to everybody at the BBS radio station and our guests tonight. Just welcome. And I tell you what, BBS radio, they don't come any better. And I just love our relationship that I have with them. They're not just business associates and partners. They are my dear friends. I just love them so, so very much and the work that they do. You know, we have a lot of great guests coming up in the next few weeks, and tonight is no exception. Tonight is one of those that I promise you, you'll want to turn the TV off. You'll want to probably grab a notepad and a pen and write down some information that you're going to be getting this evening from our guest. And I'm excited to be able to get to talk with her and hear how she and the years of wisdom that she has shared with so many people in her community and her work. And now with her clients, what she can maybe help me with. So I always like having guests on that I can get some therapy from and counseling from personally too. Might as well get it while it's free, right? I'm teasing. But, you know, I was thinking the other day, and I was honestly just sitting here looking at my first book. And you know, when I look at this cute little face, me in kindergarten, I sometimes, I don't know if you ever do this, but you look at yourself and you go, I can't believe that was me. I wrote about it in this book, and I think I wrote about it in the new book that is coming out. It's out now, but you can only buy it from me or from the publisher. You can't get it yet on Amazon, but it's coming out shortly. It'll be released in July, I think 25th, and then August 12th. I write about it in there that I really don't enjoy looking at the mirror because of what I see when I look in the mirror and the image that I have of myself. And I don't know, I'm sure there's counseling tips of how to deal with that, and there's probably ways to work through it with your own self-image and your low self-esteem or whatever it is. But I often, and maybe if I'm the only one, okay, but I just want to see maybe as I open up tonight, always like to throw out what's on my mind and my heart to see if it happens to gel with yours. But have you ever truly asked, as you're looking at yourself in the mirror, who am I? Who am I really? And nobody will ever know you better than yourself. And I think that's so important. And nobody should ever have the power to define you more than yourself. Kids, teenagers, young ladies that are dating other guys and all these guys, you better know who you are and how precious you are. And if you don't recognize that, don't take for granted what everybody's telling you, because they probably have something motivated inside them while they're telling me that. And seeking approval from others allow them to have the control and the dominion over your own identity. And do you really want to trust them with that? I don't think that's such a good idea. The outside world is never going to have a great understanding or a great picture of what's really on the inside of you. Good night. We barely know. Let's be honest. Sometimes I'm shocked with what's inside of me. And our opinions of our identity obviously aren't always valid or accurate either. But they definitely affect how we feel about ourselves. There's a connection. So some days I need to sit in that chair and just close my eyes and just explore really what's inside of me. Not what other people think of me, not what other people see of me, but really what's inside of me. And I need to try to get a grasp on what's really in there. That's a picture that's never going to be captured on film with the cell phone camera. And that picture will never be validated by the people that surround you. One of my favorite authors, Dr. Seuss, says this: why fit in when you are born to stand out? Well, I'll let you know, between me, you, and the doorpost, you can lean into this if you want to. There is no normal, or what's considered common isn't common everywhere. Just travel sometimes to other countries, to other states. What's common here isn't common in Maine, in Boston, in Washington, D.C. If people don't like you and accept you for exactly who you are, here's a great word of wisdom for me tonight. Change the people, not yourself. That's what I needed to hear tonight. And I don't know if anybody else needed to hear that tonight, but I battle with that all the time. Sometimes over my life, and I can see it, I can see me doing and acting different ways with different people just so I'll fit in. And tonight, I think, going to be focused a lot on children. And I hope there's a lot of kids that listen to this, because sometimes you just need to stand up and say, hey, wait. I'm not going to fit in anymore. I'm not going to change just so you'll like me. Like me for who I really am. And then you'll find out who your true friends are. Okay? That's enough of that. I'll get off my soapbox. Tonight, we have a fantastic guest, and I'm just going to bring her on right now, Natasha Warner. And for over 30 years, listen to this, for over 30 years, she worked for the Federal Bureau of Investigations, better known as the FBI. And she is an accomplished expert on timely and relevant subjects relating to equity, inclusion, and belonging with community, and that advocacy work that's so important there. Having worked with doctors with adults with severe mental health and intellectual disabilities, she is now a clinical mental health counselor. She has more master's degrees than I have pairs of socks in my drawer, master's of art, master of education, and she's also a published author and has several papers published, articles on behalf of grief support advocates. And if I tell you what, there's so much work to be done in grief work, and I may drill down into that a little bit too. She is a past previous host of a podcast herself, so she's probably going to tell me later on what I've done wrong. And in that, she's discussed a variety of topics relating mostly to social awareness. And And I didn't used to get involved in that. I didn't really used to pay attention to that. But nowadays, I think we need to. I think the importance of that is more relevant now than it ever has been in our history of our time. And she's a devoted wife, mother of three children. And right there, if you're a mama of three, you are a certified expert. So welcome to the program tonight, Natasha Warner. Natasha, can you hear me tonight?
I can hear you.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Where are you at? You got a tree behind you. Oh, a zebra. Oh, my.
Cheetah. That was a cheetah.
A cheetah. Okay.
Yes. So I took that picture
tonight.
I'm sorry, what's that?
Where are you located at right now as you speak?
Yeah, I'm in Delaware.
In Delaware?
Yeah, it's the first state.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to the program. And you know, just I could have read a whole slew of stuff about you. 30 years with the FBI. How in the world did you get involved in the FBI to begin with?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll make it quick because I know the show is only an hour. But I actually started the FBI as a high school intern. Yes, many moons ago. So long story short, the FBI came out for career fair. A few of my friends were running to go take the test. And I'm like, I didn't see them when they were here a few weeks ago. And they recruited me. And I tell people, when I usually tell kids when I go out and speak to them, the FBI actually kidnapped me. And here I, you know, here I was 30 years later. And I was finally able to speak.
That's so, fantastic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my career with the FBI. And that picture that I took is actually in South Africa. I went there for a work trip. I call that my workcation. It was one of the best trips of my life going to the motherland. So, you know, I have that there for the cheetah was like watching over me. But I actually took that with a cell phone.
Oh, that's awesome. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, how did, Tasha, did we learn about each other, connect with each other? Was it all through Dr. Gale or how did that all happen?
Yeah. So Dr. Gale, I'm still at, so I walked in the ceremony, but I actually finished my degree in a few weeks. So Dr. Gale showed your video and I was so compelled by your topic. I was like, I have to reach out to this guy and let him know just how much he impacted my life. And then to tell you that you are the picture of resilience. So I wanted to reach out to you that way and let you know, because I'm a firm believer in when something moves you, you gotta reach out. So many people, we touch so many people's lives, and yet we never really know because people don't like or share or whatever. But I wanted to let you know how much you impacted me. So I reached out to you and just to let you know that I appreciate your story. I shared your story with my children just to have a catalyst of having that conversation about safety and awareness. And so that's how we connected, you and I.
And how old are your children?
So I have a 10-year-old, I have a 12-year-old, and then I have a 20-year-old. But it was ironic. My 20-year-old, she's just a daughter and I have two sons. She was cooking and she was listening to, as I was listening to your speech. And she was like, she sat down and just started listening. And then, of course, the one kid came in and then the other kid came in. And so all three of them were just sitting around listening to your story. And I was like, my husband and I, we both worked in law enforcement. And so we always talk to our children about safety and awareness, and they think we're paranoid. And so for us to be able to have reinforcement through your engagement, it was like, okay, we're not crazy. We're not paranoid. This is why we are so involved and so aware. And my 12-year-old one day, he said, Mom, you're doing too much. And I'm like, now you see why we do too much. This is why. So I wanted to just have, I mean, we're very candid with our children. We don't do the whole, I don't even know the birds and the bees story. My mother and father never shared that with me. They were very real and candid. And that's how we are with our children. So they are very knowledgeable about sex and what happens to a body and girls and boys and all that. But we wanted to be able to have that as a backup to let them know exactly why we do what we do and why we're so concerned about safety.
You know, have you always had those perimeters in your mind, or did your involvement with the FBI raise the awareness of what is reality around the country and around the world?
So very briefly, and I won't go into the candid details, but a few years ago, this is probably about 10 years ago, my daughter was younger. And I had an opportunity to go to, so I worked in Philadelphia, field office for most of my career, and I was trying to transfer to FBI headquarters in DC. And one of the supervisors of the child was called the NCMEC, which is National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. So he offered me a temporary duty assignment in DC. And at the time, you know, I'm looking at money. I need to get to DC. I need money. I'll take it. And he was like, chill out, go down, see if you can do this kind of work, and then come back and let me know. And I'm like, yeah, I got it. Like, I can do this. I go down, I sit down with one of the ladies who's an analyst at the NCMEC, and we get something to eat. And all of a sudden, I said, I was starving. I said, let me finish my lunch, and then I'll eat over here, and I'll swing over to your desk, and we'll look at these images, and, you know, we'll see if I can do this. So she's steady eating. She's eating, she's looking at images. And then all of a sudden I finish, I'll swing my chair around, I look at the computer, and I'm not giving you the gory details, but I almost vomited. And that changed my life. I'm like, how can you watch stuff like this? And so what she explained to me, which is very important, the people who do that kind of work, I applaud them. Most of them don't have children, but she mentioned to me that I'm not really looking at the images. I'm looking at stuff around in the images, in the video, so that can bring up clues. So there's a bottle or there's a whatever. I can see that. And then that can help me identify who this victim is and who the perpetrator is. But I realized right then and there that the supervisor was absolutely correct. I cannot do that kind of work. But it did reinforce, as you mentioned, it reinforced what I had already had in my limited amount of education about that. It just made it more prevalent that this is why I don't trust many people around our children. So, you know, these are parents doing these kind of horrific things. It's I'm sure people are aware of your story, but imagine that now with somebody videotaping that. So those kind of images were on the video screen for me to see. And I was like, I can't do this work. But it also just that one time seeing those kind of images, it let me know this is why we are so cautious around and for our children.
You know, I haven't thought too much about it, but it just came to my mind now. I can't imagine if what happened to me then happened to me today with people and cell phones and video access to be able to tape. That would be so horrific. Boy, that makes me get goosebumps right now to even think, wow, there could be that out all over. And the sad thing is that is what's out all over the world now on the internet.
And they keep being re-victimized over and over again. People are sharing those kinds of images. People pay for those kinds of images and video. So yes, it's horrific, but the people who do the work to stop those perpetrators, again, I applaud them. This is something that I realized I couldn't do. It gave me such an awareness of what's out there that and I was like, yeah, I can't do this kind of work.
Wow. Okay. So when your kids watched, and I don't even know which video they watched, but of me doing the presentation, did you have a chance and opportunity to talk afterwards about their thoughts and feelings, and how did that resonate with them? Because I'm pretty raw, especially when I talked to you. I believe that was towards a group of social workers. I try to gauge my rawness with whatever group I'm speaking to, but social workers, I try to tell them even more what it is. How did they react to that?
Well, it's different for, I'm sorry, I'm getting feedback. For my children, again, they are different. I'll say they are different in that most people think when you think of a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old, they think, oh, they don't know much. But again, my children know a lot, and we don't try to sugarcoat. Again, these kids nowadays, they have access to the internet. They have access to their friends, et cetera, of, you know, showing and telling them things that we wouldn't necessarily share with them. So once I knew that my kids knew way back when, that they knew they were very aware about sex and what happens to the body, my husband and I, we use that as an opportunity to just be open with them. I'd rather them ask me questions versus getting it from the street. So I'll give you a quick story. Years ago, my daughter, again, she's 20 now, but she was about, I guess she was in kindergarten. She gets on the school bus and she comes home and she says, Mom, what are balls? And I was like, what do you mean, what are balls? And she said, you know, I heard some kids on the bus, and the older kids, they were talking about, they were singing that song, to the windows, to the walls, to the sweat drop down my, and I was like, what? You know, again, she's in kindergarten. And then she says, Mom, fix your face. You told me I can talk to you about anything. And so I was like, yeah, you busted. You got me. So again, we talk to our children about anything. If you have questions about sex or what this does, we also talk to our children about sex not being dirty. So we have boys, and again, boys apparently like to touch themselves or whatever they do. And we tell them it's not dirty. It's not, it's your body. Your body belongs to you. I don't get to touch you as mom. Dad doesn't get to touch you. And I think I shared this with you. I may have when my two sons were watching that video, when you asked about what their reaction was, I said, has anyone ever touched you? I said, has daddy ever touched you? Has Courtney, my daughter, I said, has she ever touched? And they both said, what? And I said, I'm asking them because, again, I want them to have this threshold. If mommy can't touch you, if daddy can't touch you, if your sister can't, if your brother can't, then nobody else can either. And again, this is a safe space so that if anyone ever touches you, again, not using, I know sometimes in the Black community, especially, I can only speak about the Black community. I know we use these words like, well, nicknames like, oh, my kitty cat, or no, it's your vagina, it's your penis. We're very clear and candid about that. When my daughter was younger, I used to try like giving her a bath and I would say, and she would tell her, don't touch me there. So telling people, even mommy, I can't touch you there. When it's time for you to take your bath, you can touch, you can wipe and wash yourself. But if mommy can't do that, nobody else can. You can't go to sit on Santa Claus's lap and all that. He's touching you in places that are not appropriate. You know what appropriate is. And every time my kids, if they go out to their friends' homes or something, I always say, hey, and they go, I know, mom, act accordingly. So they know we have that baseline of what's according, acting accordingly and what's not. So if somebody touches you, you already know that this is not safe. This is not what's supposed to happen. Tell us.
Fantastic. I tell you what, we're going to take our first break. That first segment just went by so fast. But 888-627-6008. On the other side of this, I want to pick your brain a little bit with why do you think it's such a taboo on the other side of the break that we even talk about or not talk about it? And then why are parents in a position where we're feeling embarrassed to even have that conversation? And I have a feeling we have lots of parents listening in going, oh, I could never do that. I want to find out from you how you broke through that and what some tips that you can give them. So we're going to do that on the other side of this first commercial break, 888-627-6008. Or I'm looking right here on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page that my son's running from Seattle. You can be able to get on there and comment if you have a question or comment about tonight, or just call in and you can talk straight to me and our guest. We'll be right back after the first commercial break. Hang with us. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. All righty, welcome back. 888-627-6008. And that commercial just talked about the book that's supposed to be coming out very soon. I think that commercial is like a year old. It's finally out. It's right here. I have hundreds of copies right here in cases across the penthouse there against the wall. If you want one, you can get on right now. I believe the Book Baby bookstore page with my name and When the Dark Clouds Come. And you can order right now and it'll be sent to you. That's the only people that are sending it out right now. Or wait till Amazon and Barnes & Noble, all of them release it. Kindle is being released July 25th. And the actual hard copy, which is this one here. And I love this because just between me and you, there's a secret on the cover of the book. And there's also a secret on the back that's the same secret that talks about what we need to understand about what's in it. It's not a mistake. It's a secret. And I want you to see if you can find it. And I don't know, maybe we can give a prize one day if somebody says, I figured out what it is. But anyway, get that if you want to. If not, just at least every time you're on Amazon, look up my name and that book. It's in that algorithm point of living right now. I think probably next week I'll send out a big email to everybody I've ever known all of my life to ask people to, hey, to get on. And if you're interested, just look and scan. You don't have to buy anything. Just look and scan. And every set of eyes to look at it, not just one more up. And I've been in the, I think, the top 100 in my first book, almost all 3 years of it being published, which is just absolutely awesome. I'm thrilled with that. And I hope this book even does better. And the reason I hope this book does better is because this is for kids. Teenagers, 20-year-olds, it's really for everybody. Every parent, every grandparent ought to get it. Every grandparent or parent ought to buy it for every one of their children because it's the book that I wish I had when I was sitting in my room alone dealing with what I was dealing with. And with that thought in mind, Tasha, and I we have not talked about this, so you can shut your computer and tell me where to go if you want to and hang up. Is there a personal story that happened to you in life that causes you to be more aware of what the world can really be in and the kind of place it could be?
Absolutely. And a little bit of feedback. So long story short, I've had those encounters where you go over someone's house, a family member's home, and I won't say thankfully, I guess it doesn't matter if it was a child or an adult, but there were times where cousins were doing things that were inappropriate.
Yeah.
And so having that awareness in my head, you know, sometimes I think we think, well, it's family, so it won't happen to a cousin or another situation. And I'll leave it there without, you know, going too much. But I did have another encounter with where there were some family members doing some inappropriate things to some other children that I was involved with and knew about it. And it caused such a rift in the family because I took it to the authorities. And so I had older family members who were saying, well, why are you getting the authorities involved? Like, this is a family ordeal and this is not necessary. I had somebody actually tell me that, oh, Tasha's making a federal case out of this. And I'm saying, you damn right. Because you don't get to touch children. And although it wasn't any intercourse involved, it's inappropriate. And if I can, this was children against children. And if I can stop another child from doing this and getting them the mandated court help that they need, why wouldn't we? Because then it can evolve into something else. And so I think before we went to break, you asked me what, you know, why is it in our community that we don't, I think it's embarrassment, you know, in certain cultures and communities, especially with different ethnic backgrounds, there are certain, like, they just don't talk about that. It's, you can't even, in some countries and there's no word to translation for sexual abuse or assault or molestation. There's no word because they don't talk about it. And so for me, what I'm trying to do with one of the primary reasons for getting this degree in clinical mental health was to bring awareness that it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to get help. And I tell people all the time for my number one priority, I have two goals as a parent. The first, and I tell my children this, the first is to keep them safe. That's my job. You don't like me. I told my daughter before when kids like, I hate you. I hate my mother. I hate my parents. Then I'm doing a great job. Thank you.
You're not supposed to be their best friend.
Yeah, if you're like, I told my kids one day, I told my son, I said, aren't we friends? He said, oh, no, I'm not your little friend. Isn't that what you said? Because I'm not your little friend. So my number one goal is to keep them safe. And the second one that I have is I tell my kids, my job is to get you to adulthood, deliver you to adulthood without you needing a counselor. Now, you might want one and all that, but it's not going to be because we caused you trauma in your childhood that you now need to be sitting on a couch when you're an adult. If you decide that you need a counselor at a younger, at an older age, great. But it's not going to be because we caused any harm to come to you. And you're not, you know, you're traumatized by something that happened in your childhood because it's something that we did. So that's my goal, is to keep them safe.
Do you feel that it's more, you can get it better accomplished with those two goals that you have by being more vigilant against everybody that comes to connection with your children, or to be more open in the communication that you have with your children to open their eyes to what is going on around them too? Which one do you think has more power for the kids and safety?
I think the latter, because we can't stop. I'm not able to spend 24 hours a day, 7 days with my children. They go out to school, they go out to play. So it's for me to make them aware of what's out there. But I don't know what's around that corner. I don't know what's down the street. I can have an idea, but I don't know. Maybe there is no harm around the corner. Maybe there is, but it's up to me to arm you. So when you do go around the corner, you do go around the street, you know, you can then become vigilant and safeguard yourself. I'm giving you the tools to be aware of what's around you. My kids, they go outside, they play, and I'm like, stop riding your bike in the middle of the street. These kids, you know, they're 20-year-old kids flying through the neighborhood. And, you know, I see them whiz by and I'm like, oh, these kids. I mean, I did it. But it's up to me to, then one day my kids, they were outside. I saw them, one was on one side of the street. The other one was, and they started racing on the sidewalk. And I'm like, guys could be coming out of their driveway, but I'm gonna let it go. But it's up to me to just put that out there of what's out there, what could be, what potential harm is out there for them to implement safety measures.
When you got into the clinical mental health counseling, why go from the FBI into that? I mean, that doesn't seem like that's a normal transition. Mm-hmm. Was it something that you always wanted to do, or was it something that you had seen when I retire out, because I would imagine 30 years with the FBI, you have a good retirement, that you can go right into something something you always dreamed about. But why that choice of that career afterwards?
So twofold. One, yes, I wanted to set up something for after retirement, and I've always wanted to do it. I kept peeing and hauling, oh, should I, shouldn't I? Because I'm, you know, in school, the pandemic, I said this to you yesterday, but the pandemic was, I used that opportunity to go back to school because I'm like, 2 years is going to come by no matter. I figured we would be in the house for about 2 years. And I was like, let me jump on this. But the other side of that coin, as I mentioned to you earlier about the FBI analysts and agents who do that kind of work, we don't realize it, but our law enforcement, police, firefighters, anyone who's in that safety protection, public safety realm, they are hurting. Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to do was, and I'm still kind of up in the air about really who I want to help, but I want to help people who help people because they're hurting. As I mentioned, my husband was in law enforcement. He was a correctional officer for 17 years and I'm good. And then one day I did my whole, you're not supposed to provide therapy for your family, but I was, talk to me, sit on my couch. And I realized that he bottled all of the stuff that he had seen up and he's packaged it and put it in a little container, but it's still inside. So one of the things that I would like to do is I would like to provide therapeutic services for law enforcement because they are, again, we both know hurt people hurt people. So how are you in a position to help someone as a public safety officer when you're hurting? Whose couch do you lay on? And I believe if we can try to help law enforcement peel back some of the pain and hurt that has been transferred onto them when you arrest someone or you're going out to a domestic violence situation, all that energy is now coming into your psyche. So I want to be, that was one of the reasons is that I found that there were so many people that I worked with who were constantly, I was an EAP, an employee assistance program peer, and they were just dumping and dumping and dumping on me. So I was like, I'm going to just go back and get a degree and then I'll just, you know, become a counselor because you guys, they dump. They have to unleash it somewhere, release it somewhere. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this as well.
When you were in the FBI, was you working in situations that caused that high anxiety inside of you? with the type of work that you were doing without going into confidential things, but.
Well, no. Thankfully, the majority of my career was community outreach in Philadelphia. Okay. So I worked a lot with our disadvantaged youth. Very stressful because, and I worked with a lot of different communities. So Asian and, you know, just all of the communities where it was always a difficult relationship with law enforcement. My job was to bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community. But working with some of our younger population, the children and teens, especially in the Black community, trauma city. And so I wanted to be able to also provide them an outlet, you know, because there's such a disjointed relationship between, you know, communities and law enforcement. I wanted children to be able to see me as a way in which they could at least trust law enforcement. So it was hard to work with communities like that because there's so much mistrust with law enforcement.
In your little bio that you sent me, it mentions that you really excel in subjects like equity, inclusion, and belonging within the community and that advocacy work. When you see different cultures, ethnic groups, Caucasian compared to African-American, and you just mentioned Asian, in the area of anxiety, stress, trauma, they're obviously from, and I'll let you answer because you're the professional. There's different ways different cultures handle or don't handle, discuss or never discuss what happens within the walls of their home, correct?
Correct. Absolutely. I think one of the reasons why I did such a, I'll pat myself on the back with it. I think I did a great job with engaging those communities because they saw that I was authentic. I think it starts, you know, in the therapy world, it starts with building trust and rapport. And yeah, with the FBI in particular, when I was there as a community outreach specialist, these folks could lean on me. They could see me and we built relationships. We built friendships, you know, breaking bread, going to their events and being there up close and up personal to hear. And they also looked at me as like, well, you walked the mile in our shoes before. You've seen this. So it was a great way. And I used to really, I'll be honest, I'm like, they pay me to do this? Because it didn't feel like work because I was building real relationships and rapport, establishing rapport with people. But as you mentioned, that's where I learned with some of my Asian community friends, you know, there's no word that translate into abuse because we don't talk about it. And so I wanted to be able to have people to sit on my proverbial couch and unload and talk and discuss because we talk about this sometimes with women, representation matters. So when you have someone who looks like me, who speaks like me, and I speak the same language, they feel more compelled to be able to say, I want to sit on your couch. I want to talk to you. You know, I'm getting older now. So I'm like the auntie. I can sit on auntie's couch and talk to her and we can have some cake and some milk or whatever and talk because it doesn't feel and when I was in my internship, one of my clients told me, she said, Natasha, this doesn't feel like, I told her, I said, this doesn't feel like therapy. Like, you sure I'm giving you therapy? And she's like, you're the best counselor I ever had. I'm like, this doesn't feel like therapy. She said, then that's when it's working. And I was like she was giving me there because I was thinking it has to be this, you know, me wearing my glasses and you laying on my couch and I'm giving you this therapeutic, you know, theory that I'm attaching and all that is accurate. But it just having a conversation how we're doing now, that's what therapy looks like. And I think for especially with ethnic communities, they don't see it that way. You don't talk about it. We don't open, you know, my mother and father had this saying when I was growing up, what goes on in this house stays in this house.
I've repeated that 500 times on this program in my book. Yeah, that's a mentality that the last generation had.
And exactly. And so what I'm trying to, convey to the next generation, even what I will say about these millennials and these Gen Zs or whatever generation we're in, they get it. They're opening up. They're sitting. They're going to therapy. And I run a program. I'm in a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. And we had during the pandemic, we had this Zoom conversation. And we brought in a psychotherapist and I was on with her. And the kids said that when we did a rating, they said, this was the best. The therapy session was the best. And I was like, really? And they were like, yeah, because like they're like, we're all about therapy. So I love that the younger generation are embracing therapy. They're embracing talking about it. That's not to say you have to go out and give your family secrets, but you do need to speak your truth. And that's one of the things that I want to convey. Tell what's going on so it unloads and you don't carry it on to the next generation. For my house, it stops here. The generational trauma stops here. We're going to unpack it, unload it, and put it away. It's not to say you get over it. We're going to get through whatever we went through, but we're not going to perpetuate that we don't need therapy. We need it.
I agree with you. And I truly believe, and after all the different research and the studies and the classes and courses and all that stuff that we go through and teach and try to research about, they claim that usually the generation cycle, it runs in cycles of three. So if my father abused me, chances are he was abused, and chances are his father was abused. And until we learn that there's a way to break that cycle, can we ever begin again? And that's one of the things that I wasn't a good father, but I made sure nobody got around my kids, especially the one that was abused me. And they always wondered, why don't we ever get to go to grandpa's house? We're not going to talk about it. But, you know, and I was always there. They didn't get to go over and sit on grandpa's lap or anything like that. I protected them, even though we had a relationship. It was very limited. And we have to break the cycle. It has to. It has to stop somewhere. And today's the day to do it.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And I won't say that you weren't a good father. I think that is definitely a good step. If you know that there's abuse out there for you to stop that's definitely a good father. You know, you did what you needed to do to keep your kids protected. You knew that going over there obviously wasn't a good situation for them to be in. So I applaud you. And actually, your book came today, so I'm excited to read it.
Oh, good. Awesome. Yeah. We're going to take our last break. We're running long. And if you want to get involved, 888-627-6008. I'm looking to see what kind of comments we have on Facebook. My phone is being texted off the radar here, so that's always good. I'll check that during the commercial break, too. If you want to get involved in conversation, just a comment. If any of Dr. Gale's fellow students welcome to the program tonight, if they want to just call in and give Tasha a little ribbing, you're welcome to do that, or just a comment about her. Feel free to do that. 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back with the final segment of Breaking the Silence. Hang with us.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. I'm in this sky, beautiful back here. Look at those clouds. I just love that. Welcome back to the program. And we have Natasha Warner with us from Delaware. And she's sharing with us not only her FBI days, but also her therapist days now, and counselor days, and her parenting days. And I think sometimes, and that's why I was really moved, ask her to be on the program, because that isn't a normal response that I would get from parents. I would, you know, I get a lot of parents say, oh, I'll make sure my kid don't touch this because they don't want to go there because it's this book is the one that's just come to you is pretty open and dead on honest. And I think if you present it to them and give them an opportunity to talk about it, I think that's going to really open up channels of communication. And I wrote that first book for the survivors, the ones that had championed through it, to let them know that they're not the only ones. And for counselors to be able to say, hey, read chapter 7 and hand the book to one of your clients and say, hey, and when you come back next week, we'll talk about chapter 7 or whatever chapter it is. And it gives us an opportunity to open up the discussion. Yesterday, you put me on the spot, and I did a presentation at Dr. Gale's class in Boston, and I guess it's Boston. I always claim that's where it's at. It's in Boston. I don't know where Dr. Gale actually is housed out of. And Tasha asked me a question, and I said, hey, wait, this I'm supposed to be talking about you, not me. And she asked me about my own self-care. And it really made me think. And Tasha, I appreciate that. I don't get many of, hey, wait, what are you doing to take care of yourself? And I think with that kind of mindset, you're going to be awesome as a counselor and somebody that can actually open up people's minds to go, hey, wait, I wasn't expecting that, but now I have to answer. And that was really good. And I appreciate you asking that. We have a caller. So let's go ahead. Tamika is online too.
Yes.
So Tamika, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hey, Tamika, where are you from?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I am actually, I'm from Philadelphia, but I live in Delaware. I saw Natasha's post not too long ago about one of, you know, Shattered by Darkness, that book, and I purchased it and I finished it today. and I said, let me go ahead and call in. Cause I just, you know, I could really relate to almost everything in your book because my experience was similar. But it was, my stepfather. So I'm ready to share my story as well. You know, I told Natasha that I am planning to write a book. I have about 7 chapters written so far. It's just, you know, life gets in the way and, you know, you get away from doing things. So Natasha was saying just write, at least write a line a day or something, you know, just to keep going. So I'm going to get with the program and get it done. But I just wanted to call in really quick just to, you know, just say, you know, your book was awesome. I can't wait to read the next one. But yes, I can relate to almost everything that you spoke about in your book.
Well, I tell you what, Tamika, thank you for calling in and sharing that, because I think that was half of my battle to admit that it happened to me too. Once I jumped over that hurdle, it is very easy now to talk about it, even though the subject's hard. I'm open about it sometimes, maybe too much. But I tell everybody that gives me an opportunity to speak to them. And I want to encourage you to keep writing. And if there's ever anything that I can do to help you, throw out ideas of mind mapping and time blocking and how to set up things, feel free to reach out to me and I will help you in any way I can, because I think everybody, and I know Tasha has a book in her, at least one, of how to parent and what she learned and how to share that. So I think everybody's got a book inside of them. So I would encourage you to keep on going. And anything I can do to help, I would love to.
Yes, definitely. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for calling in tonight, Tamika. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Tamika. Now, I just wanted to say to Tamika and people like her listening, I just want to throw a shout out to Dr. Gregory, that he is real. He's real and he's authentic and he means what he says. So if he's going to help you, Tamika, she reached out to me a few weeks ago, right after we had spoken, and told me that she would be watching. And I didn't know what she was going to say. But I told her just write, because as you mentioned, I tell people all the time that everyone has a book in them. So just write. Yeah. Just put it out there. Just dump it. You can get an editor to help you streamline it eventually, but just get it out. I echo those sentiments as well.
And, you know, also, Tamika, and anybody else that has a story, why do you think we call the show Breaking the Silence? We've had people literally come on the program in the early days and tell their story for the first time ever. The family never knew it. And it was like, whoa, this is really breaking the silence. But if you ever want to tell your story, Tamika, or anybody else that's listening, text me, call me, write me, email me, whatever it is, and I'll get back with you immediately, and we'll talk a little bit. And if it has some interest, and I think that it would really help our listeners, I would love to have you on. And Tasha has that ability with what I heard. It was an immediate, I want to hear from you. So thank you for calling in. Tasha, in the last few minutes, if you had to give some wisdom of what you've learned, not only in the FBI, but hosting a podcast. I've learned so much from other people, and everybody thinks, hey, you know, I'm throwing out the wisdom. No, I'm soaking it up like a sponge. What is probably some of the best advice that you would give parents or even children about what's going on around them and in the world and how they need to relate to their children, if you're talking to parents? Just what kind of wisdom have you learned from that you would like to share before we end up running out of time tonight?
So I'll keep it brief and try. I'll say that there is no such thing as a perfect parent. I fail forward every single day. And I tell my kids when I yell and I fuss and I cuss, and they're like, I'm not a good parent. And they're like, no, you're good. We get it. We know, we see you. So don't worry about that. I'm like, thanks. Now do the dishes. But what I will say to parents is that we don't give our children nearly enough credit for them knowing what they know. And like I said before, kids go out into the world. They have their phones. If they don't have a phone, my daughter taught me this, their friend will bring an old phone, so they'll still have a phone anyway. So don't assume that your children don't know. And when you said earlier about parents not wanting to share that information, that's their prerogative, but I personally would share that story with my children. I want them to know what's out there, what the world. Our home is very safe. It's a safe space, but we can control that. We can't control what's out there. So I personally want my kids to be armed with knowledge to protect themselves. So they're not innocent. They're never going to be innocent victims. They're going to know. They're going to be able to see the snake coming a mile away. The other thing I want to convey to parents is we may not agree with what our children decide to be or who they become. I wanted my daughter to be the first. When Ketanji was selected as the first Black female Supreme Court justice, part of me was angry, because I always used to whisper in my daughter's ear when she was little, you're going to be the first Black female Supreme Court justice. And one day she woke up, she was about 9 or 10, maybe younger. And then I said bye to you when you left this morning. She said, I heard you. And I said, no, you didn't. You didn't even stir. And she said, you whispered that Supreme Court thing in my ear. I'm like, so you did listen. And then she said, and I said, why do you say that thing? And she said, Mom, that's what you want for my life. That's not what I want. I was like, what? So I backed off. I never said it again. I say that to say our children are going to be whoever they want to be. That it's not our, like, we had our moment, step back, step off. You can guide them, but give your children the safe space to be who they are, but also to know what they know. Like, they know stuff. And I had some coworkers years ago, you tell your kids about that? I'm like, they know. My kids don't know that. They do. Trust and believe, they know. So I would prefer to be able to convey that information of safety to our children versus them finding out on their own. So my message to folks who are listening, share Breaking the Silence with them. Share part. Well, you don't have to, if you don't want to get too graphic, share parts of it. Have conversations to find out what they know, and then build a safety plan around that. It's all about a safety plan for your kids. They need to be able to, if something happens, we want them to come and tell you. And it's not always the big boogeyman. It could just be other friends, other peers, luring them with candy, luring them with whatever to get them to do certain things. So that would be my message for parents as well as children. Have a safe space.
Yeah, that's good. That's good wisdom. I think 80 to 85% of everybody that has been sexually or abused or assaulted as a child are 80 to 85% of people that the family knows and aware of, part of the family or a friend of the family or somebody that they are familiar with. It's not the stranger danger that's happening in the park. Not very much of it is. And I think the who you are goes right along with how we opened up the program. She did that full circle. Thank you. I think the Bible has a verse somewhere in it. I'm going to play one of those games where it's somewhere in there. Trust me, that it talks about the bent that the child has, indicating that the child already has special talents, tendencies, gifts, treasures that has been already instilled in them. And they're bent towards things already. And if a parent tends to unbend that in the direction that the parent wants, you'll end up breaking them. We need to allow them to go with the bend and go with the way they're created, and then embrace that and let them become who they are and love them for exactly the treasure that they are. Tasha, I can't thank you enough for being on the program tonight. I just appreciate you. You're spending some time with us and sharing with us from your heart. Thank you for being the parent that you are. Thank you for serving our country the way that you have through the FBI and just the different communities that you have influenced. And now I want to thank you for all the people that you're going to help that's going to be in your room getting your wisdom and allowing them to release the pressure that they've been carrying around inside of them. And I have a feeling you're going to be awesome at that. And you already are awesome at that. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. If somebody wants to reach out to you, do you want to share an email or anything? What's an email?
Sure. Tosh, T-O-S-H dot Warner at yahoo.com. Old school.
Tosh, T-O-S-H dot Warner at yahoo.com would be the way to reach out to her if it's just a word of encouragement. Or if you just have some questions about some things that you mentioned tonight, that would be awesome. Thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thank you so much for having me.
You take care. Appreciate it. As we do every week on this program, I always like to end it the same way. And I don't apologize for that. So if it's redundant to you, go ahead and click off. I hate to be that rude, but this is important. No matter what you've had to deal with in all of your life, no matter what you see when you look into that mirror in the morning, or when you're brushing your teeth before you go to bed tonight, no matter what you're going to have to face tomorrow, as long as you have air inside of these lungs and your eyes still open up to face the world, there's hope in there for you. There's hope in this world. And there's a roadmap to hope. And all you have to do is start taking a journey to move towards that hope and never, ever give up. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. Join us right here next week for another live edition from Houston, Texas, for Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have an awesome week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.